This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Good evening. This is your transfer rumour mill. Me, Matt Beadle, not Johnny Burrow, by the way. Me, Matt Beadle, 7pm to 8pm tonight. All the day's big transfer talking points, dissected, discussed, and in some cases, debunked. For is Wilfried Zaha genuinely considering a move to Everton? A player, lest we forget, has repeatedly reiterated his desire to leave Crystal Palace for Champions League football. Is he going to get that at Goodison Park? Sean Derry, ex-Palace captain, was on Posh Boys earlier on today before this show, and he could not believe the link. Unbelievably shocked. £60 million, apparently, with Everton striker Cenk Tosun. Quite clearly unproven in the Premier League. He is not the answer to replace Wolf Zaha. He is not the answer to score goals at Crystal Palace, where they have struggled for quite a few seasons now. Now, in the current climate, you also wouldn't imagine that Zaha would think he'd get Champions League football at Everton. Then again, he's not guaranteed to get that at Arsenal either. Not this season, certainly. But perhaps he's the man. Perhaps he is the man to bring the glory days back to the Emirates. Hence his desire to move to North London, because apparently talks have been ongoing since May, or at least that's what we're led to believe. Elsewhere, United, Man United are still in the hunt for Bruno Fernandes, or are they? Quotes from Sporting Lisbon manager Marcel Kaiser this week suggested he almost seems a little resigned to lose the midfielder. Obviously scored against Liverpool in yesterday's pre-season fixture. Another club, of course, touted as potential suitors, but Sporting are holding out for around 70 million. So far, United have allegedly bid 20 million below that fee. So that doesn't look like it's working out too well. Nicolas Pepe, of course, of Lille is another man linked with a move to Old Trafford. He's been linked with pretty much every other top club throughout Europe. Reports today suggest that he's on his way to Napoli and not going to be coming to England. What else have we got? The Harry Maguire train, that one rumbles on. Are you bored of it yet? Are you bored? Because I certainly am. Much like Neymar, much like Bale, this one looks like it's going to go on and on and on until the very end of the window, at which point we'll see all kinds of frantic, crazy activity and saturation, social media madness. All could have been avoided a few weeks earlier, couldn't it? And what is going on with Philippe Coutinho? Of course, Barcelona today have apparently put him up for sale at 120 million. They don't want him. He's too much for Liverpool. They don't want it back. Apparently, he's no desire to join Man United. He can't go to Chelsea, of course, because of the transfer ban. And Arsenal have not got a hope in hell of drumming up that kind of cash. So very, very interesting. And rumours also coming out of Barca that even Rakitic could possibly flee the nest without a solid replacement lined up. You can't see that happening just yet, at least not this season. And what for another ex-Barca man, Dani Alves? He's currently a free agent, but Pep Guardiola has ruled out the chance of a reunion back at Man City. Alves, of course, now 36, but a player who's won titles in Spain, Italy and France in each of the past five seasons that he's been a player. So you'd like to think if anyone's going to sign him, he could be something of a lucky charm. Perhaps Spurs, a right-back shaped hole with obviously Kieran Trippier moving to Atletico Madrid. Could it happen? Let the rumours commence. So to summarise, it's all kicking off, really. A lot of chat, but with 2 weeks of the window now, 2 weeks left, where the top clubs are concerned, perhaps with the exception of Arsenal signing both William Saliba and Dani Ceballos this week, very little is actually taking place. But a man they've reportedly been in talks with as far back as May, is Wilf Zaha. And I'm delighted to say that Chris Hambling from the Back of the Nest podcast, who currently appears all the time on our Palace fan show on Love Sport, is here to talk about whether Wilf Zaha is going to move to Everton. Chris, is Wilf Zaha going to move to Everton?
I sincerely hope not, for a number of reasons. No, I think it's a strange one to sort of come out of the blue, really. Obviously, the Arsenal rumours have been very, very strong. And I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, the last couple of summers, it's been pretty clear that Wolves agents have been looking to see if they can get a better move. And it's, you know, the last couple of years, it's ended with a better contract for Wolf. But, you know, so really trying to force the issue this year. And I think Arsenal's approach to it has meant they've really got to start sort of trying to push that a little bit further. So I do feel that Everton might be being used as a bit of a stalking horse to try and drive that price up to where Palace need it to be. But at the same time, you also sort of wonder, you know, is there maybe a bit creeping in there? And if the relationship between Wolf and Palace kind of deteriorates, he's got to have an option to move.
How much of this is a concern for you guys? I know you've been speaking a lot on the Palace fan show on Love Sport, but how much of it is a concern? Because Wolf is loved by the Palace fans, right? Absolutely adored. But if things do get a little bit sticky and relations between club and player just get a bit fractured, how's that going to go down amongst fans? Are you very much in Palace's corner or Zaha's corner?
I think fans will always side, generally speaking, with the club. You know, no player is bigger than the club. That's a statement that gets trotted out quite a lot. And you know, some fans already have kind of just said, "Well, we just want to get it over and done with." Wilf's sort of shown his colours, if you like, and he wants to move on. And I think really it's all about the destination for Palace fans. If he moves to a big club, he gets Champions League football, and we get a big sum of money. I think most people realistically would hate to lose him, but Tom recognises that he's one of the best players we've ever seen play for Crystal Palace and deserves perhaps a bigger stage. And we're just a little frustrated that we can't provide that stage. But also, you've got to be realistic, haven't you? But I think, you know, I think people will turn on Wilf if he ends up joining a team like Everton. And, you know, the club, I don't think they can really win in either case. You know, if they keep an unhappy player, they'll be blamed for making him unhappy. If they sell him, there will always be a bit of resentment for letting your best players go.
Now, we had Sean Derry on Posh Boys earlier on today, Chris, and he said he was shocked. He couldn't believe that this rumour, if it is a rumour, has come about. And he just thinks that Zaha is good enough, obviously, to play for a top four team. You'd imagine he's going to say that. And he also said that he was convinced Zaha was going to stay in London.
Yeah, well, Deza knows his stuff. He's a top man. And he's absolutely right. I mean, Wilf's gone on record as saying how important it is for him to be in London and to be around his family in particular, I believe. You know, his dad has had some health issues and he's been talking about how really he values being able to stay in and around London. So he's you know, right there. You know, that's where his family is. And he's had that experience. Okay, he was a lot younger, but when he went to the Northwest and he really never settled in Manchester, never really sort of bonded with people around him and was constantly back down in Croydon to his family. So I think there's certainly a bit of that. I think if he can stay in London, and that's why Arsenal seems to be the club that his representatives have really been going for. They have an interest. It means he doesn't have to go anywhere sort of in terms of where he lives. It's the perfect solution. As the transfer window ticks on, you just wonder how desperate things might get.
Some great quotes as well from a former boss in Ian Holloway, Chris, today. I don't know whether you saw those. Absolutely brilliant. Suggesting that if Gareth Bale is surplus to requirements at Madrid, why don't they go all out for Zaha or even Barcelona? Now, some people may laugh at that. They might have a little chuckle and they might think Ian Holloway's losing his head again. But in your opinion here, because you rate Will Zaha so highly, is he good enough? Is he good enough to play at that top, top level in La Liga?
It's really interesting. I would say yes straight away to that, first of all. But I understand why people who don't watch Wilf week in, week out would think not and think it's quite a laughable statement. So I kind of get both sides of it. We always wonder just how good he would be with you know, really strong players all around him. You know, you've seen sort of players who I would consider lesser players than him really come through and succeed, but in really big teams. I mean, not knocking him at all, but Raheem Sterling has been fantastic at Man City, but I don't think he's got Wilf is, you know, is anyway lacking in terms of the skill, directness, and ability that Sterling has. But people will laugh at that when they hear it because, you know, Wilf doesn't have that profile. He gets unfairly labelled as a diver. He's got, you know, quite a fiery temperament. And, you know, people don't see him in that breath. But I really do think that would be people would really see what we're talking about. You know, the talent he has is phenomenal. I've never really seen anything quite like it, the way he can beat players in the blink of an eye. And I go back to one of his first managers as a first-team player, and who got absolutely ridiculed for this comment as well. It was George Burley way back when, who saw Wilf in training and said he has, you know, he was saying he has feet like Messi. And, you know, people laughed at it at the time. But he was trying to make the point that he, you know, he's not the world's best player, but he's in that bracket of special talents that have an ability that you can't teach. And that's what it is about Wilf. There's something there that's not been coached into him. It's this inherent ability to just, you know, play the game at the very, very top level, excite people, get them off their seats. And that's why he's worth the money.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that quote from Burley and the fact that it's hard, isn't it? Because when some players stick with clubs like Crystal Palace, and no disrespect to Crystal Palace, and the fact that Wilf Zaha obviously went to Man United, it didn't work out. It's that perception, isn't it? It's that unfashionable perception that no chance can a player who stayed loyal to his boyhood club, no chance could he have feet like Messi. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is. So, I mean, it's difficult not to get ridiculed when you say things like that, because, you know, you're mentioning a player like Messi, who's clearly one of the greatest, if not the greatest, ever to kick a football. But, you know, you can still use him to try and make a point. And you often have to go to extremes to try and make a point when you're talking about footballers. But, you know, I think I just wish that, you know, a lot of people had seen Wilf the amount that I've seen him, because it's been a real pleasure watching him play for Palace in both spells. And, you know, I get frustrated when people, or some people don't even realise that he came from Palace in the first place. They think he's a player we bought off Man United. And it's, you know, we're really proud that he came through our academy. He grew up just right down the road from the stadium. You know, he's a proper South London kid who's made it big. But he really does, you know, in all honesty, he deserves a bigger stage.
This move, just to go back to the move that has been touted to Everton, Cenk Tosun, obviously, in as a make. I don't want to laugh. I shouldn't laugh there, really. He's a professional footballer.
I did.
But listen, 39 Premier League appearances since he joined Everton, 8 goals. Now, Palace are in desperate need of a prolific striker. This isn't the guy, is it?
Well, no, I don't think it is. Interestingly, we were in for him before Everton bought him. We would certainly look at him as a solution. To be honest, he is a Palace type of striker. And I don't just mean that he doesn't score very many goals. I think, you know, he is a physical player. He can lead the line. It also probably worked well in a 4-4-2 that Roy's been employing of late. I think he'd probably do quite well for us, but, you know, it doesn't soften the blow of letting Wilf go. The bigger problem of that, you know, OK, it's a sweetener in the deal, but we've still got to try and replace Wilf with Zaha, and that's impossible. I don't know how close we could possibly get.
It's interesting, Chris. I was actually expecting a different response from you there on Tosun. So you think he could fit into the style that Palace play?
I do, yeah. One of the guys on our show, Dio, who also does the fan show on Love Sport as well, he's Turkish, and he isn't a huge fan of Cenk, but personally, I just think there's something about him. We love a striker who's got a bit of character. And to me, he's just got that bit of character, that bit of physicality. And I just think the style we play now, it doesn't really suit. You know, we're not going to get a player who's going to bang in 20 a season, really, because we're not really creating chances in that way that always fall to a striker. Even Batshuayi, who's just prolific in front of goal, you know, he only scored goals in sort of bursts for us because most of the time he was running around playing a lone four up top. So, you know, we've got a certain way of playing, and I do think that Cenk has the characteristics that would suit that system. But he certainly would join us and be prolific, and he's no Zaha replacement.
Okay, well, look, Chris, before you go, just general feelings at the moment. Obviously, Stephen Henderson has come in from Forest, the goalkeeper. Yeah. That was a free, obviously an ageing goalkeeper, just to act as backup ultimately. And today, Jordan Ayew has come in from Swansea, was obviously on loan with you guys last season. But I'm going to revert back to the Tosun statistics that I gave you. He scored once last season, are you? I know he's not an out-and-out striker, but just the one goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a terrible window so far. There's no hiding from that. We've done very little. We've not got long till the season starts. And it's been a bit depressing, really. But we do like to do late business. But are you... It's a good deal for the. If you look at the money we spent, it's rumoured to be about £2.5 million. You can't really get much for £2.5 million these days as a squad player, as an option, as a somebody who could play across either the front three or as a striker in a two. You know, he's okay. He's got talent, and he does work hard, and he sort of won the Palace fans over a little bit by the end by just that hard work, that ethic that he gave. But, you know, he's not going to pull up any trees. And, you know, we're going into a season now where certainly if we lose Zaha, I think most Palace fans will be fearing relegation. And we really have an awful lot of work to do to freshen up that squad and bring in a bit more quality. And, you know, the work's got to start yesterday. We're running out of time here.
Nice one. Cheers, Chris.
No worries. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. The work has to start yesterday. Crystal Palace running out of time in this transfer window. Will Zaha be at Selhurst Park next season? Who knows? Coming up, we are going to be talking Toby Alderweireld and Harry Maguire.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Yep, this is Love Sport, and you are listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill with me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 8 p.m. this evening. Right, let's very quickly touch on old slabhead himself, Harry Maguire. Now, as things stand, we need to just clarify what's going on here, because as things stand, he remains a Leicester City player. As things stand, we're led to believe both Man United and Man City are battling it out for his signature. Now, both clubs want a solid centre-back before the season starts. We know that. Where City are concerned, it's more a case of boosting an already decent backline. Vincent Kompany has obviously moved on in the summer. They could do with a like-for-like, and Maguire would fit that bill, you'd suggest, probably quite perfectly. Now, where United are concerned, there's quite clearly more of a desperation for that marquee centre-back to take the club forward. We've seen what an impact Virgil van Dijk has had for Liverpool. Now, like it or not, United fans, that, what Liverpool have done with Virgil van Dijk, is a marker going forward. Leicester quite clearly aren't desperate for the cash. United are quite clearly desperate for a defender. Vis-a-vis, Leicester are going to hold out, and I truly believe this, Leicester are going to hold out for in and around £90 million before letting Maguire leave. They've already apparently turned down a £70 million bid. Now, at some point, United have to turn around and say, yeah, we're going to pay the cash, or no, you can stick it and we'll move elsewhere. Because as things stand, again, this constant back and forth isn't doing anyone any favours at all. Maguire isn't on United's pre-season tour. United don't have a top centre-back in their ranks. Regardless of what kind of season people perceived Victor Lindelof to have, he's okay. Axel Tuanzebe has promise, but you can't see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer having faith in him to lead the back line permanently next season. Chris Smalling and Phil Jones, and Eric Bailly, after the friendly with Spurs yesterday, could now be out for a while because he has a knee injury. So if you're Ed Woodward, you have to start thinking about going elsewhere. If Leicester are going to hold you to ransom for ridiculous amounts, move on and buy someone else. And if you'd thought like this just a few weeks ago, you could have nabbed Toby Alderweireld for £25 million. £25 million for a player who's proven for 5 years in the Premier League that he is a top centre-back. An established international in this market for £25 million. That's gone now. The clause which allowed him to leave for that amount expired apparently on Thursday. No one took it up. So he'll either now leave on a free next season with Spurs, or he'll renegotiate his deal. Absolute insanity. Now, to talk about that, I cannot wait to hear what he's got to say about it. We've got George Sessions. He's the Spurs and Orient correspondent for Archant London. George, what on earth has happened here with Toby Alderweireld? And do you have information that teams were indeed in for him, or he just wanted to stay put at Spurs?
Yeah, so it's quite a unique situation, isn't it? I think that that sort of clause in his contract is, it's a bizarre one, because it only really triggered once he was offered, or once he was sort of not forced to sign, but once he had the year extension triggered in his contract, and then it kicks in. So that following summer, I mean, yeah, it's no secret that Roma were really interested in him, and there was talks going on between the clubs. But by all accounts, I don't think they sort of felt like they could afford his wages, or I think they probably felt £25 million was a bit steep. But you know, you just said it there yourself, he's a proven, you know, brilliant Premier League defender, and I think United have really had an absolute shocker, to be honest. The fact that they've spent so much time focusing on Harry Maguire, who is a very good player, but in my opinion, I don't think he'll ever be as good as Toby Alderweireld. And I'd say Toby's probably a better player now. So why you wouldn't sign Toby for £25 million and offer him a 3-year contract, to say, it's madness, really, from Man United's point of view. But from Spurs, he's sort of with the Spurs hat on, it's great that they've still got him, and he's not left for £25 million, because I think Daniel Levy now will probably say he wants Toby, you can spend £30-40 million on him.
It just seems like, like you said, it just seems like complete insanity. I don't think anybody in football can actually understand what's happened here. I mean, you say that Roma thought £25 million was too much. Yes, he's 30 years old, but in the current climate for a player of Alderweireld's ability, £25 million really is a snip. I mean, if Tyrone Mings is going to Aston Villa for more than that, you think that it's a snip. So are you aware whether United even approached Spurs about Alderweireld?
I mean, I'm not sure. I'd imagine there would have been conversations between the clubs this summer, but I know going back to, well, it must have been last summer when Toby had a bit of an indifferent season. He'd got injured. Then when he came back, Pochettino, suggestions of a fallout there, and he didn't really play as much. It was mainly Vertonghen and Sanchez at the heart of Tottenham's defence. And there was a lot of talk about Man United being in for Toby last summer. And then eventually, you know, come the end of the window, he stayed. And then sort of, you know, any kind of animosity between himself and Pochettino seemed to be completely squashed, because he went on to have, you know, not his best year with Spurs. He's probably been better than that, but it was definitely up there with one of his best. So it's just it's a strange one. You know, I'd imagine Man United, they must have been interested in him. I mean, you know, you said it yourself, 25 million in this market really is a snip.
Well, this is reminiscent, isn't it, as well, of when David Moyes had his first summer at United and Marouane Fellaini was the only arrival, and they ended up paying over the odds for him because they decided to sign him after the clause in his contract expired, where they could have signed him for less.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I wonder from United's point of view whether it's slightly, you know, they don't want to kind of concede defeat when it comes to that first target. It's pretty clear Maguire's been their first target for the last 6 months. And once they kind of realised, £80 million is going to be a lot of money to spend on Maguire, I think their pride, well, I think Ed Woodward's pride, maybe kicked in, and he knows that he's not, you know, as you just mentioned there with that Fellaini deal, he's not done very well at all, if we're being honest, when it comes to United and the transfer market. So I don't know if he thought it might be another way for fans to sort of hit him with a stick and say, oh, you know, he went for Maguire and couldn't get Maguire, and he's gone, you know, now he's gone for his second option, but. Like I said, I think the second option would have been better. So it's I don't really understand how, you know, Man United, who clearly need defenders, have not gone in for him. And there was also talk, wasn't there, you know, not too long ago about, you know, Arsenal apparently sniffing around. I mean, they need centre backs. It wouldn't, you know, I would have been very surprised if they didn't have a conversation with Spurs. But I would imagine that you know, that wouldn't have gone too far. You know, I'm not sure that Toby even himself would have wanted to do that, because, you know. And I guess it's a similar boat with Man United, because neither of them are in the Champions League. So it's, you know, it's technically a step down in terms of that kind of level. But then he would have been getting a lot more money there. So I'm just surprised neither of them actually, you know, really tried to actually, you know, just activate the clause and then see what happens from there.
There's another layer to this as well, isn't there, in the fact that Daniel Levy always wins. I would imagine that chief execs and presidents all over Europe are furious at the fact that this option hasn't been taken up, because now Levy's going to revert to type, and if someone does come in for Toby, he's going to ask for millions. This was like the only opportunity where you could imagine Levy being frustrated at the dealings, because he would have lost out. But yet again, it's going to look like Levy wins. He always wins.
Well, that's the thing. Like, this was the way for anyone, you know, that wanted to beat him, because, you know, you offer 25 million, you don't even have to talk to him. All he has to do is, you know, click the accept button, pretty much. And then you go straight to Toby. And then, you know, from then on, Toby, if you're going to offer Toby a lot more money than he's on at Spurs, bear in mind he's not signed a real new contract for a long time, then, you know, the chances are he definitely would have been interested. So it's just a... I don't know, it makes me think, and I've kind of said this for a little while now since Toby done really well last season, that the kind of long term I see with this is actually him signing a new contract extension with Spurs rather than leaving for a free. Because, you know, he's very settled at Tottenham. He's got a young family, and I think he knows that the next payday he gets will probably be his last payday before potentially going and finishing his career at Ajax. Similar to Vertonghen, I'd say, in a sense. And I wonder now if maybe he's realised over the last few months that in his head he actually wants to stay at Spurs. And I don't know, perhaps his agents kind of sounded people out and said, oh, well, you know, maybe don't try and sign him for 25 million because, you know, he really desperately wants to stay at Spurs. And to be fair to Toby, all the stuff he's come out with in the press, he's constantly reiterated how focused he is on Tottenham and how he loves it at Spurs. And I think he probably, you know, maybe looks now at the contract he's turned down and perhaps thinks, you know, actually, if I'd accepted what Spurs were offering, you know, say a year and a half ago, it might not have been the worst thing in the world. But I would imagine Pochettino would like to keep him for longer than this season, because he showed last year that, you know, he's pretty much almost back to his best after a difficult season, the one before.
OK, George, well, that is Spurs. You also have close links to Leighton Orient now. Obviously, we are a bit of time on from the tragic passing of Justin Edinburgh, their previous manager. Ross Embleton in charge, an interim appointment, of course, with Danny Webb and Joby McEnough kind of helping out in the background as well. As I understand, it's interim just because of the situation, and if circumstances get a bit too much, they can go out and get a new boss. But pre-season, it's not been too bad. They haven't lost yet, have they?
No, pre-season's gone as well as it could. I mean, I think it's been a difficult pre-season for the whole club off the pitch. Because I think it was 2 days before that first game at Harlow, you actually had Justin's private funeral, and then you had a memorial service, sort of a celebration of his life, the day before the Hornchurch friendly, which was last week. So during this kind of pre-season fixture schedule, they've had to deal with, hugely emotional days. And I think it's going to take the whole club quite a long time, I think, to truly move on. And I think Justin will obviously be at the forefront of all their minds right now. And I think, the club made the right decision going to Ross. I don't think it would have been fair on anyone potentially coming in. And I don't think it would have been fair on the players to have appointed someone new. You needed, I feel like Ross, Danny and Joby, because they're going through the grief process that all the players are going through, that they all understand each other. If you brought someone new in, it would have been very difficult for them to actually understand what the players are truly going through. And this pre-season has gone well. They've scored a lot of goals. They've got two new forwards up front, Connor Wilkinson and Leanne Goh, and they've both got off the mark and got a couple of goals. Leanne Goh in particular is very sharp. And
well, actually, I was interested to talk to you about those, George, because obviously Macaulay Bonn and Josh Caroma both departed in the summer. Two new strikers have come in, Leanne Goh, obviously Connor Wilkinson. Now, not prolific by any means, and we're talking about, 34 goals last term scored by Caroma and Bonn combined. So it's quite a task for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting to look at both Wilkinson and Goh's careers, because they've not... I mean, Wilkinson did do very well at Dagenham last season, but before that, he was a bit hit and miss, really, most of the places he'd been. So it's, they're taking gambles on these players. You can definitely say that. I think Leanne Goh's best kind of season in the Football League was sort of 11 or 12 goals at, when he was at Peterborough a few years ago. Mm. So they're not exactly prolific, but I think part of the reason with this is because, as excellent as Josh Cromer and Macaulay Bonn both were, their real success came in the first half of last season, and then Josh Cromer got injured in January time, missed about 6 weeks of football. Macaulay Bonn's goals dried up, and he did score some crucial ones towards the end of the season, but in that second half of the season, Orient really learned how to win without relying on those two, and I think they're probably always going to sell them both, and they knew that they were only going to keep them to the end of the season. So maybe, I would imagine Justin was thinking, we need to find a way of winning without relying on them so much. And it did work in the end. He switched from a 4-4-2 to a more kind of solid 3-4-1-2 formation, and it worked a treat. They looked a lot more, there's a lot more solidarity there defensively, and they were scoring a lot of goals from set pieces. And I think going into this season, they'll really look to, again, be very successful from the set pieces, and then hope that the new forwards can chip in with goals. I mean, if they both get, you hope that they're both going to get double figures, then that's not a bad tally, as long as you're getting, centre-backs chipping in, centre-midfielders chipping in, wingers. So I certainly think they've both got, very good potential to be good players at Orient, but I guess if anything, you always want to hit the ground running. If either of them go a couple of games, three or four without a goal at the start, then the questions will be there and then the pressure will sort of get to them and things can quickly change. But hopefully they can both get off to a good start. I mean, all its fixtures look fairly favourable, I'd say, in that first month.
Nice one. Cheers, George. Top stuff.
No worries at all.
That was George Sessions, the splendidly named George Sessions, Spurs and Orient correspondent for Archant London, discussing Toby Alderweireld and the fact that he is not going to leave Spurs, it would seem, in this transfer window. And he was also weighing up Leighton Orient's prospects for next season. Tough times, obviously, but pre-season, it's looking good. Right, half an hour to go on the transfer rumour mill. We're going to be talking Sheffield United next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
This is the Transfer Rumour Mill on Love Sport. I am Matt Beadle with you for the next half an hour, where we dissect and perhaps debunk some of the transfer rumours to come out. Lots of talk again today, but two deals that have gone through are for Sheffield United. Dean Henderson coming back in on loan from Man United, obviously very, very influential in promotion last season. And Ben Osborne also coming in from Notts Forest. That one looks like to be a great signing, in addition to the five other signings Sheffield United have already made this summer. And we have James Shield, Sheffield United correspondent and writer for The Star, on the line to discuss Dean Henderson. A very decent deal today. Hey, James.
Hello there, Matt. Yeah, it certainly is. I think this is... Dean was a vital cog in the promotion machine at Bramall Lane last season, and Sheffield United have made absolutely no secret of the fact that they've been absolutely desperate to get him back all summer. I mean, initially, it looked as if the deal would be pretty simple to do. I can remember speaking to Dean myself during the sort of the immediate aftermath of the promotion celebrations, and he made it perfectly clear that rather than sit on the bench at Old Trafford, he wanted to come back to Sheffield United and prove himself, you know, by playing regular football in the Premier League. I think that suited him both sort of medium term and also in terms of looking to the future at Old Trafford, which is where I still think he sees, you know, the majority of his career being played. But it's proven a little bit difficult to do. I think there's been all sorts of sort of little tweaks and little mechanics that I'm sure we'll go into shortly that have prevented it from being a quick and simple deal. But yeah, they're absolutely delighted that it's been done.
Well, yes, little mechanics, as you say there, James. What's happened here? Because we're seeing this a lot in the summer, right? You're seeing these deals that you'd think would be able to get over the line relatively quickly. And this one is a player who's already been at the club on loan. He's done very well. He's quite clearly not going to be a first choice, not even a second choice at his parent club. Obviously, David De Gea and Sergio Romero at United. Lee Grant as a number three. Joel Pereira, obviously, in the wings too. So he wasn't going to play for United. Why has this taken so long?
Well, I think I wrote today actually in the paper that it's the saga around this has been a little bit like sort of watching your favourite thriller about 101 times. That you know you still jump when sort of one of the plot twists happens. You still get nervous when you know the suspense gets cranked up, but you probably know how it's going to turn out in the long run. And this has been a classic case of that. But I think one of the main reasons has been that when Dean went back to Old Trafford at the end of last season, he was just in the closing stages of his present deal, and Manchester United quite understandably made it pretty clear that, you know, they wanted him to sign another contract before he was allowed to leave again. Now, I think the way it's worked out, it's been a little... Sheffield United have spent 12 years outside the top flight. And, of course, as you go up through the levels, the complexity of these deals gets greater and greater. And I think this has been a little bit of a crash course for them in sort of the politicking and the brinksmanship that can go on. As far as we're aware, what's happened is that Dean Henderson's representatives, quite understandably, it's their job to make sure that their clients, you know, as well remunerated as possible. I think what they've seen there is David De Gea's contract demands go up and up. I think they've probably seen other players at the club negotiate new deals and see their wages go up and up and up. And I think there's absolutely no doubt that Dean Henderson returned to the Northwest as a much better player, a much more valuable player than the player who left there the summer before. So it's taken a long time to do the deal. There's been some logistical problems as well. Obviously, he was away with England's under-21s this summer in Italy and San Marino at the European Championships. But, of course, what's happened is as Dean and his agents have sort of renegotiated that deal at Old Trafford, of course, that's, you know, likely to have had a knock-on effect in terms of the financial outlay that Sheffield United will have needed to found to bring him back to South Yorkshire. Of course, you know, there's a loan fee. I think that was pretty much, you know, agreed very, very early on. But had they sort of negotiated to pay a percentage of Dean's wages, which they will be doing, of course, you know, as his contract demands went up, that will have had a knock-on effect. But I think ultimately it was always going to get done because it's a deal that suits everybody involved. I mean, Dean's a confident lad. He spoke to me very, very openly at the end of last season about wanting to be England's number one at the next World Cup for the senior team. And, you know, whilst there's going to be an awful lot of other goalkeepers who will have something to say about that, make no mistake, this lad is quite capable of going all the way. He will have known that when he'd been having his contract talks with Manchester United. But equally, if they want to see him, you know, become the number one at Old Trafford in the long term, they're going to want to watch him playing Premier League football. And, you know, so it suits Dean, it suits Manchester United. And as you said earlier, Matt, you know, with the role that he played in last season's promotion winning squad, it certainly suits Sheffield United as well.
James, I completely agree with you. I like what I've seen of Dean Henderson. I do a lot of work with Richard Lee, who's on this station as well, and he's constantly singing Dean's praises. It's not so much the way he plays, but I do think that he is quite similar to Jordan Pickford in terms of his confidence and his stance that he sort of projects when he's playing. You get the sense, obviously he made that error in the Euros, which was pretty horrific, but he's the first person to come out, and he released a tweet shortly afterwards and said, look, we make mistakes, but it only makes us stronger. And he's kind of building a brand for himself as well. He has that "soon on top" label that he puts at the end of all of his tweets now, and I think that's just building the buzz around him.
Well, he's certainly connected with the support up here in Sheffield. And you know, that's one of the great things that's happened under Chris Wilder, actually, is the relationship between the team and the Terraces have become sort of pretty fractured as they've sort of just languished around in League One for so many seasons. And that has been restored, and Dean has really bought into that. You know, the crowd love him. I think he enjoys that adulation from the crowd. But just going back to your original point there, it's going to sound quite strange, this, for somebody who kept over 20 clean sheets last season. But the most telling moments for me, there were two, and they were actually probably the two lowest points of the season. And one was in the Yorkshire Derby against Leeds at Bramall Lane, where perhaps just a little bit of overconfidence tried to see him bring the ball out and play a pass during the closing stages of the game. It led to Pablo Hernandez scoring the winning goal for Leeds at the death. And you know, obviously 3 points went begging, but also an awful lot of local pride as well. Although I think it's fair to say Sheffield United got that back in abundance towards the end of the season. The other one was towards the back end of the campaign when they surrendered a 3-goal lead during the final 3 minutes at Aston Villa.
Absolutely.
And Dean was certainly culpable for a couple of those goals. But I've seen an awful lot of good goalkeepers at Sheffield United down the years. And the thing that separates Dean from those, and I mean this in a good way, is that when he makes a mistake, and I guess Richard will say this about this, this is what all good goalkeepers need. He just seems to have that mental capacity just to park it, to draw a line and move on. And, you know, there was a very good young goalkeeper who came through here a couple of years ago, George Long, and I think he can still go on to be a very, very good goalkeeper. But I think it's fair to say that when he first came into the team, he didn't have that sort of ability just to be able to park a mistake and start afresh again. And you could see it sort of psychologically affected him. Dean, that it just seems to brush off him. I know he feels it. Because, again, you know, during my conversations with him, he admitted sort of how low he felt after that game against Aston Villa. But the minute he puts the gloves back on and steps back out into that professional arena, his strength of character really is quite remarkable, especially for someone so young. I mean, he's 22 and in goalkeeper terms, of course, he's a baby. And it's little things like that, but combined with the ability that he's got, that makes you think, you know, A, he's going to only get better, and B, you know, if he does continue to progress at the same rate, I think Sheffield United, Manchester United and England certainly are going to have a very, very good goalkeeper on their hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And the psychological aspect, absolutely, James, is so key with goalkeepers now. A lot of modern goalkeepers using it to their advantage. Tom Heaton is one who's spoken openly about the processes he goes through. I just want to quickly move on to the rest of the signings so far in the summer for Sheffield United. Ben Osborne obviously came in today from Notts Forest, has represented England at numerous youth levels. But I just wanted to touch with you, James, on the whole recruitment strategy at Sheffield United, because it really seems to be paying dividends. Paul Mitchell, obviously the chief talent spotter there, and they've got a real system in place, right? They use data and they collect data on hundreds of players and basically look at how their careers have gone and whether they're the right fit for Sheffield United.
Absolutely, and it's this lovely mix of sort of new school and old school methods. You know, they do an awful lot of statistical analysis. As you quite rightly said, Paul Mitchell tracks hundreds of players, you know, and sort of, you know, considers their career trajectories. And then Chris Wilder, who was very much a part of that process as well with his assistant, Alan Neil. But they also really dig deep into the characters of these players. And other than Phil Jagielka, I think the reasons for signing him speak for themselves. Ravel Morrison, of course, you know, that one may well be a risk on paper, but you know, if it's a risk that pays off, then again they've got one hell of a player on their hands there who ordinarily they wouldn't be able to afford. But Ben Osborne, as you mentioned, he really is sort of almost a poster boy for this recruitment strategy. And if you just sort of draw one strand out of that, one of the interesting things is I know they've been tracking Dean, they've been monitoring him for quite some time. They've shown their hand now, I think, for two reasons. One, clearly they've now got the financial muscle to get him out of Nottingham Forest. And clearly, it's you know, going to Sheffield United and the possibility of playing Premier League football is you know, a big, big attraction for the player himself. But it's also the timing. And I know this is something that Paul Mitchell looks very, very closely at, where they're looking at the right time to buy a player and the right time for them to come in at the right time at Bramall Lane, if you see what I mean, in terms of the club's overall development. So although on the face of it, it's a pretty sort of simple strategy in one sense, underneath that, there's so many strands and so many complexities to it. And you're absolutely right. By and large, most of their signings fit a pattern. You know, the players, they will tick certain boxes, they'll fulfil certain criteria. And when you look at the outlay that they've spent on players, the amount of money that they've used to recruit players over the past three seasons, the club has done its bit. It's given them a good competitive budget. But when you look at some of the teams and the outlay that they've spent, that they've finished above in the Championship last season, you know, I think they certainly get an awful lot of bang for their buck at Bramall Lane. And that recruitment strategy is, I would say, in my opinion, probably about 85% of that.
James, that is absolutely excellent stuff. Thank you very much for your time. Some fascinating insight there. That was James Shield, the Sheffield United correspondent and writer for The Star. Right, about 13 minutes to go on the transfer rumour mill. We are going to be talking about Jurgen Klopp and the big, 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 big money he will not be spending in this window.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport and this is the Transfer Rumour Mill. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 8 p.m. this evening. We've got about 11 minutes left. Before we speak Liverpool, I just want to touch on Aston Villa. They've made their 11th summer signing today. That takes their spending up to about £120 million. We've seen Matt Target come in, Jota, Courtney Hawes, Anwar Ghazi's come in, Tyrone Mings for a staggering £20-25 million. Ezri Konsa's come in from Brentford. Bjorn Engels, Wesley from Club Bruges, Trezeguet and Douglas Luiz from Man City was announced yesterday. Wesley's coming from Club Bruges. Apparently, they've also signed Marvellous Nakamba. What a wonderful, wonderful, or a marvellous name, I should say. Zimbabwean international, also from Club Bruges, played with Wesley there, a powerful central midfielder and a target, we're led to believe, since January. They couldn't get it over the line then. But again, like we were saying with Sheffield United, this strong recruitment strategy at Aston Villa, they've obviously got chief executive Christian Pulisic at the helm. We know him from his history with both Liverpool and Chelsea. Now, they've made 11, but apparently Villa are in the market for a 12th. We're led to believe it's either a goalkeeper or another striker. Jed Steer clearly not favoured as the number one choice in goal. And you just worry about this transfer strategy because, yes, 11 players is good, but we could see Aston Villa basically lining up at the start of the season with a whole new starting 11. And sometimes, perhaps it's just worth buying one, two or three marquee players and building your existing team around them. There's new cultures, there's new environments, everybody's got to integrate together and Villa need a good start. So it'll be very interesting to see how that one works out for them. And actually, just looking at Douglas Luiz Douglas Luiz's quotes. Sorry, very interesting. All the classic stuff you get from footballers. I think the prospects are looking good. There are young and experienced players here. It's a good mix. I think with the help of our coach, we're going to have a good season. So cracking insight there from Luiz, as we would come to expect from the modern footballer. And speaking of quotes, Mr. Jurgen Klopp has been running his mouth today with various quotes about United and the fact that they're not in for Philip Coutinho. We've got Jay Riley of Radio City Talk and the Kop Table podcast on the line to discuss it. How are you doing, Jay?
Hey, mate, you okay?
Yeah, very well, thank you. So, these quotes from Jurgen Klopp today, very, very interesting. I was watching the stuff on Phil Coutinho and the fact that he said, I like Phil, he's a fantastic footballer and all that stuff, but it will be a big, 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 big money signing and it's not our year for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously Liverpool have just won the Champions League.
Have they?
If you look back to last season. yeah. And, you know, obviously getting 97 points in the Premier League campaign, losing only one game. I don't think there's a massive need for Liverpool to sign too many players, is there really? But I think it's always good to sort of like add to your squad if, you know, when you're in a position of strength and you've just won a massive trophy like that. And there shouldn't be an issue with finances, but it does appear that Jurgen Klopp seems happy with what he's got and he's going to go into the season without any new signings.
It's interesting. What's the feeling like on Merseyside? Because Klopp's obviously a very confident character. You've made your one signing this summer. I always hark back to when Sir Alex was in charge of United. I don't want to compare the two, but Sir Alex Ferguson always made a big thing of at least signing one player. The likes of Rio Ferdinand always used to say that when we came in at pre-season and there was a player who'd been bought for big money, it all raised us a notch. We all thought, right, OK, we need to step up a level now. It looks like that's not going to happen at Liverpool this summer.
Yeah, I think what you've got to look at, though, Klopp's also said in the past, though, hasn't he, that it's very difficult to like sell a club to someone in the sense that the 11 that he picks, the strong 11 Liverpool have got, not too many people are going to come to Liverpool's club and be second fiddle to some of the players we've got at the club. So that's the issue that Liverpool have, really. And I just think there's other things Liverpool are looking at. I know for the fact Liverpool are after a big deal for next summer. Now, maybe they're keeping the powder dry for that and he's just happy to go into this season now with the players that he trusts from last season. And obviously now in pre-season, I've had the opportunity to look at a few of the youngsters and see if they are good enough, see if they are going to be valuable for the squad in the coming season. And it's obvious that Jurgen Klopp really has high hopes for Brewster, the young kid. And he's only 18, isn't he? He's coming off a bad injury from last season. And it's interesting to see if he gets a lot of game time this season when called upon.
You mentioned youngsters there. Obviously, Brewster is highly rated. Harry Wilson today has been in the news. Newcastle and Villa apparently looking at a loan deal.
Yeah, he's a strange one, Harry Wilson, because he's 22 years of age now. He's 23 next season in March time, I think it is. So, you know, Jordan, next season he's going to be 23 and he's not a kid no more. And I think he does need game time. And it's a strange situation because he went out on loan last year with Derby and he looked good in patches. He scored, I think it was 15 goals in 40 appearances. And, you know, he does score some wonder goals as well, but that's the Championship. It's a little bit different standard to the Premier League, and maybe you get a loan move in to a Premier League club this summer. And there's talk of Aston Villa, there's talk of Newcastle as well. I think Liverpool probably would prefer to sell him, though, being honest. Someone offered £20 to £25 million for him. I think Liverpool would do a bit of business, but it could be that he just goes out on loan again. And Liverpool have got a few players like that, really, because there's another lad, Ryan Kent, who was on loan last season at Rangers. And I think he really enjoyed his time up there. And I think he'd like to go back, but Liverpool want money for him. And it's not easy for Scottish clubs to pay the money, is it?
Absolutely not. Would you be gutted to see him go, Wilson, permanently?
Well, to be honest, I've not really seen much of him. And people might say, we'll give that lad a chance. And you've got to consider that Liverpool haven't made signings this summer. I mean, he signed a young Dutch kid, but how many games he's going to play, I'm not so sure. Probably not many. So maybe Wilson will be given an opportunity in the squad if we can't strike a deal with another Premier League team, because I don't really see the point in him going back to the Championship. He's proved that he's good enough for that level. We need to know whether he's good enough for Premier League level. But as I said before, he's going to be 23 years old, Jordan, this season, coming season now. So he's not a kid any longer, is he? He needs to be getting game time, playing week in, week out. And if he's not going to get the opportunities at Liverpool, then he needs to move on to pastures new.
Jay, thanks very much for your time. That's great. That was Jay Riley of Radio City Talk and the Kop Table podcast, reacting to the news that Harry Wilson is a target for both Newcastle and Aston Villa today. He needs games. Will he go on a permanent deal or will it be on loan? I'm sure we'll have plenty more to tell you about that particular deal on tomorrow's Transfer Rumour Mill, because that is it for today. We will be up next with the Chelsea Fan Show. Very much looking forward to that. This is Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.